You're heading south of the Mason-Dixon. This is the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Here is your host, Brian McClanahan.
Welcome back to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. This is your host, Brian McClanahan, and this is episode 95, covering the week of October 23 to October 27, 2017. Glad to have you back on the program. Glad to be here. Before we get started, just want to remind you of a few things. If you do like this podcast, please share it around on social media. You can find the Abbeville Institute on social media and on Facebook. You can find us at Abbeville Institute, on Twitter at Abbeville Institute, and you can find us on YouTube where you can subscribe to our YouTube page. If you don't want to go out and look for all those things, you can go to our webpage, abbevilleinstitute.org. At the top of the page, you can find all of our social media buttons. In addition, you can find our Amazon Smile button. You click on that, you'll make the Abbeville Institute your preferred charity. So every time you purchase an item at Amazon, you do throw a few pennies our way. Also, while you're on our webpage, please go ahead and give us an email address, and we'll give you a free ebook, Kirkpatrick Sales Emancipation Hell. And not just that, you get signed up for our email list, which includes our daily dose of Dixie Monday through Friday and our weekly email on Saturday or Sunday, which includes a link to this podcast. If you do like the Institute and you want to help us explore what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition, you can go to our webpage. At the top of the page, you'll see a button that says Support. You click on that, little tab will come down. You'll find memberships for individuals. You click on that and you'll find all of our different membership options. You can give as little as $3 a month or $25 a year if you're a student, or $5 a month or $50 a year if you're not a student, to help us continue to explore what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition, help keep the podcast going, help keep the website up and going, help keep our programs up and going. So all of those things exist on your generous contributions alone. So consider doing those things and helping us out and helping keep the Institute moving forward. Okay, some things I want to talk. This week is an interesting week. It's kind of eclectic, but I actually want to start in reverse. I'm going to start with Friday's piece first because it gets into this idea of what the South is, at least to the modern mind. And then we'll talk about how that works into the rest of the pieces for the week. So the piece on Friday was written by a new contributor, Lewis Liberman, and he is a graphic artist. In fact, he gave us a cartoon to use on our Facebook page, which was really good. But this is a funny little parody of the. We've talked about these shows on the podcast already. The fact that there's going to be a series of shows on Amazon and Netflix which portray the South in a very negative light, and the Confederacy. They're you know, dystopic future shows where the Confederacy won, and then you have the interaction with the North. And of course, in this particular parody or satire by Liberman, he says, quote, like Confederate, our show will also depict an alternate reality of the United States where the South has successfully seceded and slavery exists. However, where our show is different is that we're actually setting it in the year 2061, a post-apocalyptic South where a conservative theocracy is oppressing and enslaving all races, as well as LGBT peoples, will be at odds with the utopian communist North where freedom, peace, and love prevails. After a series of terrifying incidents along the Mason-Dixon line, a cybernetic Abraham Lincoln and a genetically superior engineer, William Tecumseh Sherman, with built-in flamethrower, of course, will be resurrected in order to fight a third American Civil War. And so this is what he's getting at, that this is the way that the South is portrayed. It's this horrible place, a theocracy, and somehow Christianity is bad. It's conservative, it's backwards. This is bad, and everyone in the South is, of course, a bigot. And if the South was left to its own devices, slavery would still exist in the South today. Because that's what Southerners would do, because this is all they know. And of course, the opposite of that is the North, the utopic North, where everything is good and peace, love, and harmony. And this is the treasury of counterfeit virtue that we've talked about on this podcast. But all he's doing here is showing the hypocrisy and the stupidity of the entire position. But it's that view of the South that I want to talk about, and how the real South is much different from that. Even the real antebellum South is much different from that. And this is why this work of satire, I think, works to understand how stupid this position actually is if the North You know, the North holds these positions, right? I mean, you go out and you look on social media, and this is what people say about the South. This is what they think about the South, particularly people outside of the South that have never been to the South. I mean, and that's a lot of people. And they think the South is one way or another, and so therefore their entire opinion on the South is based on falsehoods and half-truths, and it's very problematic. But that's why I want to talk about that particular theme moving forward as we look at the pieces for the week. And so I'll start with Monday's piece, which was written by Philip Lee, entitled A Black Advocate for Confederate Monuments. Oh my gosh, are you serious? There are actually black people that want Confederate monuments to remain? Well, absolutely. There's Nelson Winbush. He's from Florida, and he wants Confederate monuments to remain where they are. His grandfather was Louis Napoleon Nelson. He was a Tennessee slave who followed his master and sons in the Confederate military. And he served under Nathan Bedford Forrest. And Winbush said, quote, his grandfather believed he was defending his home state of Tennessee from Yankee invaders, not fighting to preserve slavery. His final wish, Winbush said, was that he be buried in his Confederate uniform. This pride has been embraced by Winbush, who joined the Sons of Confederate Veterans nearly three decades ago. Well, wait a second. I thought only white people wanted these monuments to remain there. And that only white people, these monuments were erected for white supremacy, and that only white people attended Confederate veteran reunions. Now, of course, even people like David Blight and others will say, well, yeah, I mean, or, you know, Gaines Foster will say, well, yeah, they had some black people. There's tokens to kind of show they weren't racist. And this was kind of funny. It was to make fun of these black people. No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. These people were part of the Confederate experience and therefore were recognized as that. Certainly the monuments that went up to the soldier, the Confederate soldier, most of whom were white, just like most of the soldiers in the North were white, and most of the monuments erected for Union soldiers in the North were to white soldiers. Are they racist? Now, of course, Blight would say, well, that is. But the problem with the North in Blight's mind is that they were adopting a Southern view of everything, when, in fact, that's not true at all. This is their view. You did have Southerners looking to build monuments to loyal slaves during the war, recognized as part of Southern society. And of course, the lefties would say, well, that just shows these people are just racist. This is what they really think of black people, that they just need to be enslaved all the time. They're trying to show that that's what they need to be. When the evidence is clear, that's not why they were putting them up or even advocating putting them up. It wasn't to ensure some type of racial superiority. It's just to say thanks for the effort that these people gave in the war. That was the point. And people like Winbush are not some unicorn. I mean, these people do exist. There are black Southerners who want monuments to remain. In fact, the most enduring image, I think, of the scuffles that took place in New Orleans while the monuments were up for removal there was white Antifa people beating up black people who were there supporting the monuments. I mean, you couldn't even write a script that was more hypocritical than that one in terms of these white people fighting against racism, and they're beating up black people. That's not what it's really about. It's not about that at all. It's about tearing down Western civilization. It's about tearing down conservative society because they want their communist utopia to be installed. And, of course, that's what the funny thing is in the Lewis Liberman post about that's what they really think would happen. And what the South actually is. And of course, it's not that at all. Reality does not work in their narrative, which is why satire works in this particular case. So, yeah, I mean, these people do exist. And I think Mr. Lee, who writes very good little pieces for us here and there, I think he did a nice job showing this, that there are black Southerners out there that support Confederate monuments. Oh my gosh. It's amazing. So from there, I want to get to the Tuesday book review in a second, because this is also part of this treasury of counterfeit virtue for the North. But I want to talk about people in the South, and then we'll get to the legal part here at the end. But on Wednesday, we ran a piece entitled The Invention of the Appalachian Hillbilly. And this is by Michael Armstrong. And I like this particular piece. Of course, Appalachia is not just in the South, but dominant in the South. I mean, you do have, you know, most of Appalachia is found in the South. And he brings up a couple of interesting things. So you have some places in the South, like the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, or also the Shenandoah Mountains, where you had people that were described in ways that weren't necessarily true. So at one point, the United States Park Service, which is an unconstitutional agency, made an effort to acquire what's called the Skyland area of the Virginia Blue Ridge Mountains in northern Virginia. And they had to remove people there, though, mountain people who had lived there for generations, because these people were seen as problematic to progress and expansion. And of course, they want to have a pristine, quote unquote, pristine communist area, and you can't have people living there if you're going to do that. So science, he says, came to the rescue. This is his quote. Quote, armed with intelligence, quotient tests, sociologists went into the mountains to prove that the inability of mountaineers to provide a decent living for themselves in the hollows and to show that their removal was in the, quote, best interest of all parties. Out of this experiment came Mandel Sherman and Thomas Henry's Hollow Folk in 1933, one of the most influential works of sociology of its era. Hollow Folk was an account of five communities in what would become the Shenandoah National Park. In the book, the Shenandoah residents were described in terms that would become the warp and woof of the hillbilly stereotype. They were said to be almost completely cut off from American life, completely uneducated, that the women were beasts, and that their children had no toys, nor did they know the meaning of the term toys. To remove such a people from this wretched environment would actually be a blessing to them, would it not? But he says that's not the whole story. According to archaeological evidence, in the late 1990s, they found all kinds of things that would show these people weren't cut off. They found automobiles, imported china, soft drink containers, pocket watches, pharmaceutical bottles, military items, store-bought shoes, jewelry, and mail-order toys, including toy trucks, porcelain doll fragments, a baseball, a harmonica, and even a Buck Rogers ray gun made in Michigan. In short, the evidence indicates that the mountain people were much like people in any other part of the country. Clearly, the hollows were not mired in hopeless isolation, as reported by Mandel and Sherman. And then he brings up the situation with the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, which was bringing power. And of course, as Franklin Roosevelt said in 1934, quote, there is a much bigger situation behind the Tennessee Valley Authority. We are conducting a social experiment. We're going to come to a shack on the side of the mountain where there is a white man who, with his family of children, is completely uneducated and is progenitor of a large line of children for many generations to come. We are going to try to bring him some of the things he needs, like schools, electric lights, and so on. And so, this paternalistic attitude became the TVA, and that helped build this idea of this uneducated riffraff in the hills of Appalachia. Now, it didn't mean that some of these things weren't true, that there were backwards people, quote-unquote backwards people, uncivilized. This is what the story was. But that wasn't the whole story. And there's another story that he doesn't actually get into, which was the creation of the Oak Ridge Uranium Enrichment Facility in Tennessee, where people were booted off their land for pennies on the dollar so they could build this big uranium enrichment facility in the name of progress to win the war. This took place a little bit later. So, during World War II. So this 1930s, during the Depression, experiment was just the beginning of an effort to get people off of their land in Appalachia. And of course, in order to do so, you had to create an image of these people as being backwards, uneducated, just downright riffraff that are going to do better because we're going to bring them power and other things. And there was a Ron Rash story entitled One Foot in Eden that contrasted these two things, and how the hero of the story in many ways was one of these uneducated people who lived in the Appalachia, and he loved it, and he was the real hero of the story. But this is the story that we get. Again, you have the vision, what the North considers the South to be, and what the South actually is, which is not this festering sore of uneducated riffraff. Just simply wasn't true. Are people cut off from the rest of the world? Again, you can find poverty and people who don't have access to things anywhere. You could have found it in the North, too. Sam Urban pointed this out. Well, I wouldn't say that because you have so many thousands of uneducated people, illiterate people in Massachusetts, that you discriminated against white people there. But you had uneducated and illiterate people all over the United States. It wasn't just in the South, but the image of the South endures that it's somehow backwards. And that gets into the piece that Kirk Sale wrote for us that we published on Thursday, entitled Slavery and the Confederacy. And he puts slavery into a perspective, an international perspective, and how, in a world perspective, a historical perspective, how slavery was everywhere in the history of man. You can find it anywhere, and how this Orwellian nightmare that we're living through, and how actually taking down Confederate monuments is actually eliminating slavery because you're taking it out of view. Kirk Sale is not a conservative. He never really has been. But he recognizes the issue at hand here, which is the whitewashing in so many ways of history. You take down the monuments. In his mind, you're actually taking down the monuments. You're doing so, you're eliminating the specter of slavery from the public sphere. And in his mind also, as the piece explains, you're actually creating worse racial tension than you would be if you just left the things up. Because the real story of slavery to him is much more complex, as people like Eugene Genovese have pointed out in his seminal work, Roll Jordan Roll. It's much more complex than what you get from your dime store narrative or your television show explaining slavery or race relations in the South and how these things were a little different than what you get. And he talks about, or Fogel and Engerman's Time on the Cross, which created so much controversy when it was published in the 1970s. Because essentially they went out and looked at the material and said, okay, materially, and they say at the beginning of that particular book, and if you've ever read it, they say at the beginning of that book, look, we don't condone slavery at all. We think slavery is a barbaric institution, that people are treated as property, and that there are horrible things that happen. But when you look at material conditions, Southerners were actually right in what they were saying about the material conditions of slaves compared, vis-a-vis other laborers around the world. They, in fact, were just as good, if not better, than those other workers around the world. And I think that's the way that these things need to be looked at. I mean, for what they are. Now, he also points out that slavery still exists. If you really want to attack slavery, and I actually made a speech one year, years ago. I was asked to present at a talk where it was a Black History Month talk. And so I gave a talk about slavery. And I said, look, if we really want to attack the legacy of slavery, let's attack slavery where it already exists, where it still exists in the world. And that didn't go over very well, because I remember the one, can you talk about, how race relations are so bad today? And I said, well, I mean, I don't see it. We're all standing here in this place and we're all talking to each other, and I just don't see it. The things that people had gone through just aren't there now. In terms of some of the issues that you watch television back in the 1950s and 60s, and some of the things you saw there, those things don't exist anymore. So I couldn't understand what he wanted me to do. But talking about slavery in context, yes, slavery is an evil thing, and it needs to end. So let's really work together in ending slavery around the world, instead of focusing on something that doesn't even exist anymore. But that's not the agenda. Again, it's never the agenda. This is why you can beat up Black people who are supporting Confederate monuments. Because your agenda is not really concerned with race or racism or the legacy of racism. It's more concerned about your forced communist utopia. That is the whole point of the entire movement to eradicate symbols of the South, whether it's the flag or monuments. Or Southerners in general make Southerners look out to be illiterate hillbillies, or these Black people that exist, but they don't exist somehow. And that is the problem with the entire situation we're confronted with today. We are living in a bizarro world in some ways. And you can't call an apple an apple. I know CNN just put a commercial out there. We're going to call an apple, even if people say this is a banana. Well, that's not necessarily true. CNN doesn't do that at all. They lie all the time. But, you know, we can't call an apple or banana a banana because, of course, if you do that, you're going to be called all kinds of names. We can't look at the historical record and say this is what the historical record says. No, no, no. It can't be that. It has to be this. So I think this piece is very good in putting things in context and how fully understanding the true story of the South and the Southern tradition would actually lend to a much more amicable situation for various people. And Southerners of all races get along on a daily basis all the time. This is, again, what makes that little piece of satire so funny, because that's the way things actually are in the South. You have large numbers of black Americans moving back to the South. If it was so bad, they wouldn't be doing that. But they're doing it. But this is not the story you get. And, of course, the agitators aren't happy with things. And they're just trying to tear things down. It's a sad commentary on where we are as a people in the United States and what we're willing to accept. And one of those things we're willing to accept, which is, again, a false narrative, is this idea that somehow Abraham Lincoln saved the Union by adhering to the Constitution. So on Tuesday, our book review of the week was a review of Liberty and Union, the Civil War Era and American Constitutionalism. The book is written by Timothy Huebner, and the review was by Kevin R.C. Goodsman. Now, Dr. Goodsman has written The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. He's written James Madison and the Making of America and Thomas Jefferson Revolutionary, along with Who Killed the Constitution with Tom Woods and Virginia, America's Revolution. So he's a well-versed scholar on the Constitution. And he takes apart this idea that somehow Lincoln saved the Union and in the process saved the Constitution. In fact, he points out the inconsistencies in this. And one, he brings up the prize cases where Lincoln did not want to concede that the Confederate States were a sovereign nation. The court held that for international purposes, the Confederate States were sovereign, while for domestic purposes, they were not. So there is the problem. He also brings up the issues of the executive branch and all the things Lincoln was doing to enlarge the powers of the executive branch, and how all of that was unconstitutional. But of course, Huebner doesn't view it that way. Huebner has eschewed things to think that he is, that Lincoln was actually right and justified constitutionally in these things. But of course, that's his training. You're taught that Lincoln was doing everything constitutionally, and this is not true. But see, this is where, again, that satire works, because Lincoln is going to save things. Lincoln saves the Union. Lincoln saves the Constitution. Lincoln saves everything. Lincoln is the hero. Lincoln is the ultimate. And it just doesn't work that way. And so when you look at reality and perception, the perception is that Lincoln is this great hero in American history. The reality is that he was not. The perception is that Lincoln saved the Constitution. The reality, he did not. The perception is that Lincoln saved the Union. The reality, he didn't save the original Union. He saved a Union that would be recreated during Reconstruction, that would reflect an entirely different Union than what we had before the war began. That is the reality. The reality is that there are people in the South of all races who support Confederate monuments and Confederate symbols. If you listen to the mainstream media, though, you wouldn't know that. Or if you listen to nitwit historians that supposedly speak for people, you wouldn't know that. The reality is that the hillbilly image was actually a myth. Now, there is part of that culture, and if you read David Hackett Fisher's Albion Seed, you'll find that there is the Celtic and culture and composed in that, and of course English culture and other things, but there was a distinctive culture in the Appalachian regions. But it wasn't this backward, uneducated, illiterate group of people that needed other people to come in and show them how to live. The reality, it was not that. So you have reality and then you have perception. This is what the piece on Friday is all about. The perception is the South is this backwards hillbilly place, racist place, a theocracy, where all you would have is some type of, you know, instability, people that were politically insane that want to just go around and shoot everybody. And, you know, they have no teeth, that they smell really bad and they can't read. This is the perception in the North of Southerners. And it's just simply not true. In fact, even if you look at before the war, Southerners were some of the most, particularly upper class South, were some of the most educated people in the country, in the world, in fact, had one of the most refined cultures, as H.L. Mencken pointed out, in the world. And yet, they're seen as backwards and problematic, because that is the extreme Northern position. And I think most of the time we need to start using that. Instead of saying the extreme, this is the extreme Southern position. No, what we're talking about here is the extreme Northern position. That was really the oddity, not the other way around. The extreme Northern position is the oddity. The extreme Southern position wasn't really that extreme at all. It was the American position, as evidenced by the fact that Abraham Lincoln only got 40%, or actually less than 40% of the popular vote in the 1860 election. And in 1864, he got less than 60%, 55%. So 45% of the American public didn't want Abraham Lincoln to be the president. If you put the South in that, he still was a minority president. It was the extreme Northern position. Even the idea that somehow the states were not allowed to secede, this is treason, that's the extreme Northern position, not the American position. The majority of Americans saw things differently. And that is the story you're not getting. You're getting the satire. You're getting the treasury of counterfeit virtue. That is the story of the war that needs to be discredited. And what we try to do at the Abbeville Institute on a regular basis is show the real South. What is the real South? Yes, the South has warts. Yes, the South has parts of its tradition that are bad. Yes, those things are true. But what else is true in the Southern tradition? Hillbillies were not what Northerners always said they were, what Franklin Roosevelt said they were. There are, again, minority populations in the South that support things that they'll tell you that they don't. There is a complex story to Southern history that's not just black and white and some cartoonish version of Southern history. It does exist. And Lincoln is not the demigod that Americans are led to believe. So we try to punch holes in that treasury of counterfeit virtue, and we do it, I think, in a very effective way on a weekly basis, which is why you should continue to support the Abbeville Institute and our mission to explore what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition. Until next time, good day.